Okay, well, we're just about ready to get started here. Looks like we have a few folks who have joined us a little bit early. That's exciting and wonderful. And here we are at the top of the hour. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. This is NAB Amplify's Twitter Spaces event discussing how intelligent content can connect you with your audiences. My name is Jennifer Wolf, content partner at NAB Amplify. And with us today, we have Badri Krishnamurthy, working with Cognizant, Dan Hodges with Consumers in Motion Retail Store Tours, Greg Morrow with BitCentral, and joining us shortly, fingers crossed, Sampath Melidi with Revid and Jamie Lynn Segal with Scriptdoor. So, for all of you listening along today, I just want to say thank you for joining us. And if you have any questions, please DM NAB Show. If we have time, we'll get to all of that at the end. And we'd love to hear your questions. Please, please, please network this event. Click on everyone's profiles here, follow them. We're going to have a lot of great people showing up, and we have some fantastic speakers to hear from. So, of course, this is in support of the NAB show live in person, April 23 through 27 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Very, very exciting. We're going to have a lot of great stuff on tap there, and it is a completely reimagined experience designed to help attendees maximize their experience and get the most of what they want out of the show. So I'd love to go in around now and have each of our speakers say hello, tell us a little bit about what they're doing, and then we can dive into the conversation. Badri, would you like to kick things off?
Perfect. Absolutely. Jennifer, again, first of all, thank you. Thanks for having us here and having me here and
Oh, and Badri,
look
it's 1
forward
a.m.
to.
there. So thank you for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
Perfect. And first of all, thank you, as I said. And just to give you some background for folks, I lead what we call our Cognizant Digital Business and Technology Unit, and specifically focused on our communications and media clients. So this is kind of what I do, meet with many of our customers in media. And in my role and the organization that I work with, we help clients transform their experiences and the experience they deliver to their consumers through some of the digital transformation that programs that we do, transforming experiences, transforming through data and AI, everything that this one is all about. Looking forward to the next one up.
Wonderful. Thank you, Badri. And Dan, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit now?
Thank you very much, Jennifer. This is Dan Hodges. I'm in New York. I am the CEO of Consumers in Motion, and we have a division called Retail Store Tours, which we'll talk about later. We work with CEOs and boards of directors to help them understand the impact of technology on consumer behavior and their business. And certainly, COVID has been an opportunity to accelerate. So, thank you very much, Jennifer.
Thank you, Dan. Next, Greg with BitCentral, please say hello and tell us about you.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. This is Greg Morrow. I'm the general manager of the streaming media group for BitCentral. So, BitCentral has been around for 22 years building workflow solutions, and more recently has developed for broadcast media, and more recently developed those an extension into streaming media. And so, as a on a personal basis, I've been kind of participating at the nexus of creative destruction in digital media and rebuilding for more years than I'd like to admit. But look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Greg. So we're still waiting on Sampath and Jamie Lynn, who will hopefully be able to join us very soon, and they can tell us a little bit more about themselves at that point. So for now, let's prepare to dive in. The NAB show, the 22 edition, has been completely reimagined, as I said earlier, to help maximize attendees' experience and get them connected to what they want most there. So our previous event here in Twitter Spaces was all about Create, one of the big pillars of NAB Show 22. And today's discussion is surrounding Connect, how we connect to audiences, how we learn about them, how we even, can we say, campaign for their time. So the big, big question that we're looking at today is, what does intelligent content mean for connecting with your audience? And Badri, I'm wondering if maybe you can kick things off and respond to that a little from your perspective.
Absolutely. For me, intelligent content is all about reaching the audience, right? I think that's, as you said, it's about making sure the content delivers what the audience are reaching out for. I think the audience have some expectations when they kind of come into systems and come into the platform. How do you ensure you understand the audience well? How do you ensure that your content is delivering to their expectations? And there are so many insights that you get about the audience before they come in. So it's how we package things, how the content gets delivered, what is the experience you create, and also within the content, what kind of like the packaging that you do, so that the stickiness with the customer or stickiness with the audience base during the viewership and also after the viewership. So for me, that's all about the stickiness the content can create with them, how you create a long-term association with the audience here.
So it's really about forging and maintaining these connections. And I'm wondering if we should back up a little for our listeners. And I see there's some new folks joining us. Welcome. Can we define what intelligent content is? I'm wondering.
I'm happy to take that.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll take it, Jennifer. Yeah. So. You know, everything's context, right? So here we are in 2022, but how did we get here? And so the race towards intelligent content had started, I guess, with the printing press. But more recently, in 95, when the web was commercialized, that created a certain type of content that wasn't available. When smartphones came on the scenes at scale in 2006, that set up the world as we are right now, with 6 to 7 billion people on smartphones producing all sorts of content. And then, you know, more recently, all of us have shared the pandemic. And so the pandemic has acted as an accelerant to all these trends that actually started in 1995. Mm-hmm. So we got here, and then COVID just did 10 years worth of innovation in two. So and thus we are here talking about intelligent content, which is very appropriate.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Greg, for walking us through that. So
That was actually Dan. I'll build a little bit on something Dan said, because it's somewhat similar to what I was going to communicate. So having been in digital publishing space for a number of years, the way people consume media in a digital environment has continued to evolve. And so back in 95, there was one browser, then the browser war started, multiple browsers, but primarily consumed via a desktop environment. As Dan mentioned, 2006, we got smartphones. More recently, we've seen the launch of more intelligent connected devices, connected TVs, screens in cars, the launch of audio enabled devices. And so from a standpoint of a publisher, and particularly a publisher that has a traditional path of how they're publishing content to a magazine, to a broadcast news environment, broadcast cable environment, or a newspaper, that there's an increasing level of complexity that publishers need to understand in order to route their content and repackage that to find their consumers for their brand and their content within the context of that expanding set of distribution opportunities. So more recently, we've seen the expansion of, you know, social platforms, fast channel environments like Pluto and TV. So one of the things that we're doing is really trying to automate workflow to reduce that complexity, layer in data so that from a cyclical standpoint, publishers can iterate and create kind of intelligent programming, i.e. intelligent content, informed by the data, you know, routed to the appropriate distribution endpoint.
Thank you, Greg. That's terrific. And it would be great to maybe get some examples of some specific use cases anyone here has been seeing in play. Badri, are there any specific use cases you're aware of that you'd love to share with us today?
Yeah, I think let me piggyback on what Greg said, right? When we started our journey on providing the right content to the audience, I think at a surface level, when we looked at data, we started with the fact that we can create hyper-personalized content delivery to people, right? I mean, we had enough recommendation engines that came into play. We started kind of telling people what they need to view and what they would like to view based on what we have seen at the starting point. But that was like initial use case. I think everyone got into the same level playing field after a while, because that was almost like expected from the audience. But what we are now seeing as we dig deeper into data, not just understanding the viewing patterns, I think the phones and tablets and all the connected devices have really kind of scaled up quite a bit within our audience. What we're now seeing is not just about prescriptive content on what they need to view, but also creating an experience that matters to them right now. So today, when we kind of work with our clients and what they are eventually delivering to their audience, we're now able to understand the behaviors of people based on like what we get from the data. So we understand the moods and sentiments at that particular moment, and we're able to kind of now deliver experience through some of those platforms that you know that exist and through different devices and other things. So there is a change in the way the experience is delivered today than what we've delivered. So some of the clients, if we work in the media segment, have all kind of transformed their business from the traditional TV linear platform to what they're doing today. Mm-hmm. And a lot of new experience that we deliver in terms of how they interact during the programming or during the viewership, in terms of understanding the cast members, for example, understanding the who's on the screen, what is the relevant information you want to know about those. Those are the new experience that we are able to create now that we didn't have in the past. And it's only moving forward in a bigger way. And everyone is catching up on that right now.
Mm. Very, very interesting. Thank you, Badri. And Dan or Greg, do either of you want to jump in with some specific use cases that are...
Yeah, so I guess the use case that comes to mind is, it's live shopping or live streaming, mm-hmm. live stream shopping. And that's a market that's a $500 billion market. And in the US, we've been live streaming for 60 years. It's called QVC and HSN. And they've been very, very successful doing that. So I think that one of the opportunities I see for the broadcast industry is, you know, broadcasters are excellent storytellers and they're excellent technicians. So what would happen if broadcasters got together with retailers? Even though 500 billion sounds like a lot, it is, it's a fraction of what the overall retail marketplace is. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the things that really excites me is, when you look at the evolution of television, started out, it's, first 50 years was distribution. The second, from 2000 to present is differentiation, but now it's distinction. And so basically audiences can basically pick what they like. Mm-hmm. You can pick something for your kids to watch trucks. You can pick, you can look at old Julia Child episodes. You can find almost any area of interest. So the behavior of, locking billions of people up for 2 years has really created an explosion in live stream shopping, which probably would have taken about 10 years or 15 years to develop. And so to me, that's one of the most exciting business opportunities for this industry, because retailers are good at retail, and broadcasters are great at production and storytelling. So what would happen if you got the two together? I think what you would see is, you know, this could very quickly become one of the top three categories in the broadcast industry. So this is sort of what excites me about this panel and this conversation. There's a real path forward, and there's a real need to harness the skills of the broadcasters as technicians and storytellers.
And that sounds like such an incredible synergy. And for any of you who are just joining us, we are here from NAB Amplify, talking about intelligent content and what that means for connecting with your audience. And we're also talking about the NAB show, which is coming up April 23 through 27 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Very exciting. And just a reminder for anyone with questions, please DM NAB show, and we will absolutely get to those toward the end. So, okay, Dan, you were just talking about these synergies. And Greg, is there anything you wanted to add to that? Or did you have an example of your own?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at a foundation, one of the things that we are trying to do is allow publishers to ingest and manage content once and distribute and monetize over many places. And so if we think about kind of traditional media space, you know, broadcast television, as an example, they had two primary revenue streams. They had, you know, cable per sub fees and advertising. So, and they distributed their content out to, you know, kind of one broadcast feed, and it was picked up. It was fairly straightforward model. In today's model, you know, that broadcaster needs to then repack that content, you know, for their owned and operated websites, their owned and operated connected TV or mobile apps. They need to repack it in a different format with different ad densities for fast distribution. They may potentially want to distribute it to YouTube or Facebook in those environments that have their own set of rules. So the complexity of the distribution, you're taking the same content and you are you're then modifying that foundational content to meet the needs of that particular distribution platform to tailor it toward that kind of user environment. And so that's a key thing, and I think a key challenge that all publishers are going through right now is understanding kind of how to do that and how to do that efficiently and how to do that in a way that generates a return on investment. So I'll pause, but I think there's an aspect of intelligent content, particularly in the advertising space, of how you present the appropriate data so the advertisers find the right users and the right content to advertise around. But I'll stop on that point.
So Greg, you're talking about advertising, and Dan, earlier you were speaking about potential synergies between retail and broadcast. So how many other sectors do we think intelligent content will touch?
I mean, it's going to be pervasive. I mean, there's all the B2B market, the health marketplace. But just to expand on what I said earlier, it's hard to imagine what you've never heard. So, for example, when Julia Child came on television, it was like, there's a person on television talking about cooking. When Willard Scott first came and gave the weather in his animated way, it was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize weather could be this interesting. What this happens, and let's say, Jennifer, you're a tulip expert. It could be that you, as a tulip expert, are attracting millions and millions of people around the world on the Tulip Channel because it's something you created. So the possibilities, you know, through Greg's technology, is really, and Badra's expertise is really. It's constrained by the imagination. It's not constrained by any physical barriers at this point.
You know, I'll jump in and extend something that Dan said, and say it kind of in a slightly different way, is if we think about, the 1950s, we had three broadcast channels. And then in the 80s, we launched cable and started able to having a music channel and on a 24-hour news channel. And the internet opened up, the possibility of having millions of channels. And so it generated a concept called the paradox of choice. There's so much content that people become overwhelmed. There's actually a book called The Paradox of Choice that you can go and kind of read about the psychology of that. But intelligent content, and you've seen this with is an example. If you guys have ever used the TikTok algorithm, if you happen to be interested in cryptocurrency or country music, the algorithm starts to tune towards your interests. And so that's an example of kind of, both from a format and distribution, but from a micro targeting standpoint, refining content based on people's interests. And so there's been an explosion of content creation and the nichification of that, to super serve kind of a subset audience.
So speaking about distribution, Badri, I imagine you might have a couple of things to say here, and especially about the hyper-targeting.
Yes. So if you look at, I know there's the focus heavily on the production side of it, right? You could kind of like package the content right, but I think there's a significant opportunity when it comes to distribution. This is kind of where I was earlier talking. Distribution, getting to the audience is the biggest element. And if you see what the world that we were living in, it was almost a unidirectional traffic and it kind of become bidirectional to kind of learn from the audience, deliver something for them. And today you're learning more. So for me, I think on the distribution part is all about learning like what the audience are viewing and how they're viewing and figure out what is the right channel in which you can create that stickiness, right? I mean, I keep saying that. I mean, the level of information that you can get from data that people are collecting today tells almost every bit of my moods, my behaviors, my motivation to kind of view a program. So how do you tap into that? And with all those channels that we were just talking about, Greg and Dan were talking about, you can reach the audience through the traditional TV ecosystem. But all these new channels that have come in, the social feeds, which is, again, still a huge opportunity for you to distribute content. If you're looking at, like, the newer population that we are trying to target, it's less of coming to an app platform or less of going to a TV, but look at how they can kind of have those content delivered to them in a platform of their choice, which is a significant amount of social platforms that they interact with. So I think there's a significant opportunity. There are more distribution channels to kind of focus on today than what they had. And also, it's important to understand the behavior so that you are able to write the channel that has got the maximum leverage from the audience as well.
And you're talking about stickiness. That's really what it all comes down to, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think you did ask about like, hey, where is this stop, or is this like relevant only to a certain industry? Mm-hmm. For me, I mean, when I look at the media and when I look at like what other industries create stickiness, I know you. I mean, Greg talked about retail as an opportunity here, right? I think I've always seen that retail is like a huge stickiness element to audience as well, right? You learn a lot because you're kind of like meeting, seeing people, you're kind of creating a buying experience, which is kind of the moments that matter. The other industry, another area that we see the stickiness element is gaming, for example. If you see what the media companies are now doing, gaming is a huge opportunity from a stickiness standpoint. You interact with the audience during gaming. I think there are reasons like why people get motivated to stay within an audience, within a content for 8 hours or 10 hours in a row is because that's the power it creates, where you're creating interaction, you're creating that stickiness. And there's a huge learning for that to be embraced in the traditional media world to create that interaction during the viewership as well.
Oh, those are some terrific examples. Thank you, Badri. And for those of you who are just joining us, welcome. And thank you for checking this out. We are talking about intelligent content and how that helps you connect with your audience. We're also talking about the NAB show coming up in Las Vegas next month, April 23 through 27th, and the kind of reimagined experience that we're going to be having there. We've been talking about the three pillars this reimagined experience is built around. Our last event discussed create. Today we're talking about connect. And the next event will be talking about capitalize. And really, it's intelligent content that's linking these three pillars. So it's great to be able to kind of dive into this. And thank you, Badri, Dan, and Greg, for being with us today. Going into kind of the big elephant in the room or in the industry. So is broadcast TV dying? Is it dead? What's going on there?
It keeps changing. As Greg said, Badri, it's morphing. Going back to the retail, TikTok, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest are all jumping into live stream shopping. So, you know, the techniques and the legacy of broadcast television is all about storytelling, telling a brand story, telling a story about the news, and creating a unique value proposition by the storyteller.
Yeah. So the answer is broadcast dead? You know, I would definitively say absolutely not. Is the repackaging of the way people consume that content and the methods to distribute that content changing and the monetization models changing? So we've seen as a flow of dollars have come into connected TV and our partners were helping them connect to these fast channel aggregators, they're starting to see, you know, checks as part of that, where that partner is providing both the audience and the monetization that is starting to be highly relevant. It's taken a while to get to a level of critical mass. But I think that you know, the idea of, you know, broadcast and programming and linear consumption of not having to actively decide on what content you want, but be programmed to. I think there was a thinking early in, you know, kind of the YouTube, you know, era in the 2005s. Oh, you know, VOD, everyone wants to be able to pick exactly what they want. You know, the relaunch of Pluto and kind of going back to the roots of broadcasting and electronic programming guide and linear and the success of kind of those models and then the emulators around them have really shown that just it's a repackaging. And then now you extend kind of the embedded EPG environment straight into Samsung TVs or smart televisions, you know, coming soon, the embedding of those environments in other places besides smart TV. I think we're going to see, just like we see a tremendous renaissance in storytelling, you know, as Netflix, you know, invested huge dollars in developing great stories. I think we're going to see a great renaissance in broadcast as the processes and methodologies and the consumer behaviors start to harden around these, and then the tooling to connect with that content becomes even better.
So,
yeah, just to add to what Greg said, in a sense, we're in the golden age of television right now with all the choices. One thing that John Hendricks, who's the founder of Discovery Channel, said in 1996, which is no one that we thought he was a little bit ahead of his time, but you're going to be able to watch whatever you want to watch when you watch. And so that's come true and it's become even more extensive.
So we're really witnessing a massive transformation throughout the industry. Badri, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, right? To say that, I mean, you want to view what you want to do, but what to view. I think that's definitely a huge element. I think, and going back to the big elephant question that you said, we have seen this morph over a period of time. This is not like a momentary time, right? I think we have seen this broadcast to a cable evolution to where we are. I think we are absolutely kind of moving forward, but there is still an audience for every distribution path that you have to reach the audience here.
So in a number of ways, while our industry is going through these changes, it's really a time for optimism is what I'm hearing.
absolutely.
100%. 100%. I think and the other thing that I'll say is that I think the tax and the carriage for broadcasters to reach global audiences was a fairly significant tax kind of pre-digital. And you look at companies like Netflix as an example, as they deploy across the world with the same library program, they augment that with local programming, same UI. The globalization of your audience and the addressable market of that global audience, of course, depending on the type of content you have, local news is local news, so it's not going to be as accessible to other places. I think it creates a fantastic opportunity for broadcasters. And the other aspect I'll say is that we've seen as the number of smartphones deploy across the world, we have 7.7 billion people. Everyone almost everyone on the planet will have a wired service and a basically a television device in their pocket to consume at any time. And so I think the opportunities for broadcasters are immense, and I don't think we've really even scratched the surface of that potential.
100%. I mean, if we look at in the last month, we look at the President Zelensky using live streaming to address a global audience and to report a conflict in real time. That, in effect, is changing global politics. So that's a recent example. But
raising $50 million from a crowdfunding across the globe in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, and addressing the U.S. Congress and addressing NATO and addressing so the power of this particular medium, we're seeing yet another paradigm shift in conflict reporting and global politics, facilitated by live streaming. So it's an amazing time in which we live.
Well, let's get kind of into the nitty-gritty of things. So how do algorithms and data analytics help us understand our viewers? Who wants to kick off with that?
Yeah, Jeffrey, I think I've probably mentioned this in a brief moment, right? I think if you look at data, I think there's, at a surface level, the data kind of gives you a good level of information about the likes and dislikes of people, right? This is kind of like starting point, in my opinion. Hey, you don't want to kind of like, want to focus on content that is not something that people don't like. So it all started with that at a surface mm-hmm. level. If you start digging deeper into the data that you have about just the audience viewership, right? We're talking about when do they view it, what kind of like content they're viewing, what kind of devices they're viewing the data from. I think there is more information about what's the momentary element in which the content is getting viewed. Are they kind of viewing it with family or friends? Are they kind of viewing it on their own? Are they kind of like viewing it on the flight back home kind of thing? So you have better information about like the motivation and what they're viewing. And if you're able to kind of complement that with more algorithms and more data to understand them better, you now have information about what motivates them to kind of come to a program. I mean, for example, I mean, I get like recommendations from my friends and colleagues on like, hey, some of the new programs that come in, right? So you now understand who are the opinion leaders who are influencing my viewership into that, right? So the algorithms have kind of like gone from what used to be a very much like, hey, I know the likes and dislikes. I can kind of like tell them what to do, be more prescriptive, which is kind of what we saw a while back. Now it's turned into kind of, let me create an experience that suits that particular time of the viewership, the mood of the person and the motivations of the person at that particular point of time. So I think the algorithms have kind of really got very mature. I think we've got like enough data about people. Now we are able to understand behaviors. We are able to understand predict behaviors and make sure the content is kind of the right content that is distributed to them at this point of time.
Yeah, I have a question, Jennifer, for both Badri and Greg, mm-hmm. and that is, attention spans used to be 13 seconds. Now we think they're about 2 to 3 seconds. Yeah. So how are what you're doing, Greg and Badri, how are you coping with that? Because, The 2 to 3 seconds is not a lot of time.
Yeah, I refute that on a couple levels. One, I have teenage boys, and if you've ever seen them focus on playing video games, they can sit unmoving for hours and play games. Or the joke around TikTok is you sit down, to watch watch TikTok for 2 minutes and just scroll through some content, and you wait, you look up 2 hours later. So I actually think that the as Badri mentioned, the intelligence of the algorithms, mm-hmm. and the immersiveness of the entertainment environments actually lead to longer session times. I've been in publishing digital video for a long time, and I mm-hmm. think that I would say that the average session times that we're seeing because of intelligent algorithms, because of better UI, are actually going up. And so I agree that people, there's an element of ADD and channel surfing equivalent of smartphone, app flipping, mm-hmm. but they're, the quality, and even something we do something on our platform that's profoundly simple as a concept, but it's super effective. We have a flag that allows our publishers to deprecate previously watched content in the algorithm. So it captures the session cookie of that particular user and allows the publisher to say, okay, only show this user content they haven't seen based on the algorithm and how the algorithm is programmed. And something as simple as that creates a better experience for the consumer, because they're not having to wade through content they already watched.
Those are some really great points. Badri, do you want to jump in there at all?
So I was going to say that I think I have a teenager, and when I look at the problem, it's beyond just like a channel flipping today, right? I mean, I've got like somebody who has one screen which is running at a 150% speed. I mean, which is one of those options that are given right now, which makes it even more. It just goes that fast, and the second screen is all about connected with like friends and family on social platforms. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think it's almost getting them back onto, okay, view the program the way it was structured for you to view, right? So it's like if you kind of like run a program at 150% speed than what it was supposed to be, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then you know that you're not getting the attention from the person. Yeah, you're probably still getting them to kind of like clock the number of hours, and you probably see them on the screen. But have you kind of really created the experience they want? And for me, I think that's the intelligence that we're moving forward, right? If like audience are kind of stuck to a program but onto a social feed, which I think we've already started seeing in the media industry right now, where we are seeing some of our customers and market leaders who are kind of complementing the media viewership within either delivering it on a social platform or complementing like a social chat window right next to kind of viewership. So those are the changes that's happening. It's less about like ADD, which I think was the problem that we faced, and we'll continue to see that problem. But now it's beyond that and saying, like, how do you kind of make sure that audience view the program for what it was created for?
And I'll just extend that. Badri, is like, I mean, I think I'm pretty good at multitasking, but I am humbled by my teenage sons in terms of their ability to multitask. You know, play a video game, talk to friends on Discord, have YouTube playing, and then respond to someone on text all at the same time. And do that in a coherent fashion. So yep. is pretty shocking. So a little bit off topic, but I just wanted to.
No, I'll share your take on that.
Badri's view with what I'm seeing in my case study of two.
Nice. So we're talking about essentially campaigning for our audience's time. And Dan, I'd love to know what sort of trends you're seeing as far as how to do that effectively.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where you can target using artificial intelligence and get someone's attention where you may not be able to get it before. And it's getting people who are passionate watching other people who love what they do. Those are sort of that's been the magic for the past 100 years of radio and broadcast. So it's simple and yet difficult at the same time.
And Badri, what might you have to add about how we can best campaign for our audience?
I think there are two elements when I look at campaigning for the time, right? One is like the creative element, which is kind of like this again goes back to, I think it's more of the content preparation than the channel part. I know we spoke about it in the previous forum. It's about how do you package the content, knowing the audience. I think that kind of creates that time commitment from the audience. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. The second part of like ensuring that you have the audience is creating more interactions as part of the content. That's probably where I see the evolution is, because if you want to kind of like get their time, they want it to be more interactive. It's not just about just an experience. I think we're probably going to go from an experience to an engagement as part of viewership. I think that's the next wave of how do you capture their time? How do you kind of get their commitment for the content that we deliver as well in the future?
I mean, a good example, Jennifer, to put it in a concrete, is that there's a social media influencer in China, and he has a 15-minute, he, who is 23, has a 15-minute show on TikTok. And basically, he tries makeup on, mm-hmm. and he tries makeup on at very, very high speed, and it's very, very fun how he does it. He's 23 years old. He's a multimillionaire, and he basically is just using that channel to try on makeup, and he does it in an entertaining way. So, you know, be innovative, use your imagination, and to make to your point, Greg, you know, do it at the speed of TikTok, you know, because other formats may not work quite as well.
Yeah. One of the things that we're doing, and, you know, I think that you've seen this on places like Twitter and, you know, Twitch and various platforms, is to be able to find your community mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. whatever your interest and find programming around your community. And so broadcast was very much one to many and one way communication. And then we had this wave of kind of social where it was user to user unstructured. But I think what you're seeing between, you know, what's happened on Twitch, what's happened on YouTube, what's happened in Twitter Spaces, and what's happening, you know, on TikTok live broadcast, and then what we're doing, you know, in our environments where we're providing kind of co-viewing and interactivity, is really allowing the content to be the anchor of the experience, but really driving the engagement and the quality of that experience by having community around that.
You know, that speaks to, there's so many statistics pointing to how the creators who are doing best in the creator economy are those who are able to curate a smaller community on a smaller platform and really devote their time to that rather than people who are spread out all around. There are just so many new methods of delivery. Let's talk about those. How are these being created using smart technology?
So I think one of the interesting phenomenons that I'll point out, you know, I'll mention two, because there is at a broad base, the challenge is there is an explosion in the ways that consumers can consume. But two I'll point out is that the growth of fast channel aggregators and the quality of the programming experience and that kind of taking kind of a curated approach and giving people, you know, both choice and scale, I think is a continued trend we're going to see. And then on the other end, you know, you've seen, you know, Discord groups that form, you know, around kind of a micro targeted community, mm-hmm. you know, sharing information around that, or, you know, variety of things. You know, when I was on Twitter Spaces earlier, that I saw there was a stock trading group, and they were, you know, there was a host and he was talking about specific trades, and a bunch of people were in there following and listening. And so, you know, the unparalleled kind of opportunity is, you know, for media to engage with consumers is, I think, almost overwhelming. And so what we're trying to do is really reduce that complexity for you.
So really, we need to kind of rethink ways in which we're reaching audiences.
I mean, I think we can learn too, because, you know, if you take the technique of the beauty influencer in China, there are certain things that he's doing that you could apply that to a gardening show or playing video games. You know, it's a different way of communication. As Greg said, his kids are doing all this great stuff and they're still able to hold a conversation and while having six games going on at the same time. So, there are ways that that companies can accelerate by just looking at what the best practice is right now, maybe following some best practices on TikTok or Amazon. There are different form factors that are constantly evolving. And so being aware of them is maybe one of the key to success.
Absolutely. And what advice might each of you have for people trying to connect with viewers?
I mean, Jennifer, here's my thought, right? I think the first and foremost is, like, I mean, I think when content creators are ready for distribution, I think they have to embrace the fact that they need to allow, like, the content to be delivered across the different distribution channels. We are no more in a luxury of saying that we'll start with something, we'll kind of scale to the other platforms and other of channels of communication we have. I think we need to start kind of looking at, like, okay, if I have the content which is rich, I've done all the homework right, how do I get the distribution across different channels, whether it's like the OTT platforms, or you're kind of like continuing to like have leverage the TV audience in sectors, or kind of looking at social platforms that are available because they are still kind of a huge distribution channel for a different demographic of audience that they want to cater to. And I was even saying that the new world is that if you miss out on opportunity, the new NFT ecosystem is picking momentum to that you're losing money on the table because you had a rich content, you had a channel of NFT, but you're not leveraging the talent. So for me, I would say that if you have done the right homework on packaging the right content, now ensure that you're not missing out on opportunity to take advantage of every channel that you have that you can distribute your content with.
So packaging and looking for every opportunity. And Dan or Greg, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I think the technique that we use with the CEOs that I work with is we find best practices in whatever industry it is. In this case, it could be content creation. And we connect those CEOs with those companies, regardless of what they're doing, what industry they are in, with best practices. The best way to learn is to learn from an expert who's practicing. May not be your vertical area, may not be your technical expertise, but there are lots of ways to not have to reinvent the wheel. And, you know, growing cross category. A good example is broadcasters and retailers to get together to find a format or formats of storytelling that will generate billions of dollars for both industries.
So I think that one of the things and the principles that I think that the media industry can adopt from Silicon Valley is test, experiment, look at the data, iterate, fail fast or win fast. You know, I've found that certain things that we've done to create a better consumer experience or create a better return on investment. You initially, you're like, okay, let's try this. And you're like, okay, that I'm 100% convinced that that's going to be successful. And you're 100% wrong. And then this other thing where you're like, I'm pretty skeptical that this is going to work, but let's, yeah, somebody else has conviction. Let's give it a try. And it is successful in terms of reaching audience or creating a return on investment of content. So I think taking that kind of, you know, Silicon Valley mentality and applying it to media and distribution, you know, Dan talked about kind of, you know, live stream commerce. You know, I think that a lot of broadcasters can experiment with that. We have broadcasters experiment, you know, local news broadcasters experiment with hyper local high school sports programming and really bringing their community together. And so, I think that spirit of test, fail, experiment, find those winners. And then once you find a winner, you'll drive into it with resources to maximize the value of it.
100%, Greg. You have to be prepared to fail to succeed, which sounds like a crazy thing to say, but
totally.
Yeah, if you look at Amazon and their just walk out technology, and they'll tell you it wasn't a lot of fun for them in the beginning because they actually were trying to create new technology. Is that Jennifer's hand reaching for the apple, or is it Dan's? Mm-hmm. We don't know, but they worked on it and they got it done. So, 100%, Greg, you got to get in there. You got to you can take shortcuts. You can use some of the Silicon Valley techniques, or what I've done is I find best practices and get them together. So this way, you can shave off 5 years of making mistakes if you can find how to partner with that. And that's the method I use with all my CEOs, because it's the way that we learn. We learn from each other. We learn from example.
Yeah, and I think to extend what Dan said in terms of learning from others, there's so many great business podcasts or things like this, opportunities like Twitter Spaces around a very specific micro target topic that someone can really accelerate their learning very aggressively. And so, and learn from that fail fast of others, take that and go in with more intelligent kind of tests that they want to do, on their own in terms of where they want to take their business or their opportunities.
And Greg, if I can add, I like what Dan said. I think one is I agree on learning from the Silicon Valley model of scale fast or fail fast thing. The other thing I would also say is build an ecosystem, because the speed in which the innovation that's happening on the technology side, because I've seen a lot of what used to be native technology companies have come in, kind of created a dent on the media side and advertising side. So if you can't go fast, then create an ecosystem that can make them go faster again, right? So that's another opportunity that people have. I think that's another thing that they need to take advantage of.
All excellent points. Thank you, Badri, Dan, and Greg. These have been some terrific insights. I know NAB Show is going to be packed with a lot of opportunities for additional insights on how people can leverage, people and companies can be leveraging intelligent content to connect with audiences. And this year's NAB Show is going to have all these different experience zones that are supporting this. I think that's just so excited. I know a lot of people get to NAB or they come out of the show and they're like, my gosh, it was just a whirlwind. And this seems just like such a great way to curate that sort of thing.
Well, Jennifer, we've actually created several programs. One's on the programming production, one's on live streaming, and one's on future tech. And these are programs that we're doing at the NAB for the second time. And you can actually sign up for these programs. They're led by experts, and they actually curate the show floor based on certain intelligent content topics. So we welcome anyone to join us on these tour programs. It's a way to, because there are a lot of exhibitors at NAB, and so the question really is, how do you navigate? And we have some of the world's leading experts helping in that regard with intelligent content.
Thank you, Dan. And does anyone else want to give a shout out to what they have planned at the show running next month, April 23 through 27?
Yes, Jennifer, you're going to, Cognizant is going to be out there at the event. A lot of my colleagues and I are going to be there. And we're going to have a lot of interesting stories of what we have done with our customers in taking them through this journey already, right? So you probably have a lot more see what people have done. So our thought is hey, you know what? We don't want you to reinvent the wheel. We have done a lot of these things. We want you to start from where we are as an industry, and as a partner, we can get you through that. So you're going to hear a lot of our stories from my peers and the experts that are going to be there, and also some of the solutions that we have built in this journey as well. So Greg and I look forward to some of those things that you talked about. But yeah, we're going to have some of these things, and I'm sure the audience will have some interesting things to come learn from the event.
Greg, do you want to chime in on what we can expect at NAB 2022?
Yeah, we'll be there, showcasing our platforms and our capabilities to kind of radically reduce the complexity and increase the monetization potential for publishers. We're announcing a brand new product that I'm extremely excited about, and so it'll be a great show. We're right by the Amagi booth, so swing by and have a discussion if you want to hear about the future of storytelling.
Very exciting. So I would like to thank NAB Show for hosting this Twitter Spaces event. This has been a really cool way to be able to connect with people and talk about how they can connect with audiences and give a little preview of what people can expect at the upcoming NAB Show. Also want to give a shout out to NAB Amplify, which is the National Association of Broadcasters year-round media platform designed to help connect and educate the, and hopefully enlighten the NAB community. And again, throughout the year, not just during NAB Show, not just during that April experience, but so we can be talking to each other and learning from each other throughout the year. And I'm super excited about this year's event in Las Vegas. Today, we've been focusing on connect and connecting with audiences, which is one of the three pillars of this year's NAB experience, the other two being create and capitalize. And then talking about how intelligent content weaves and encircles all three of those pillars. Really appreciate the three of you coming to talk to us today. Badri, I know it is quite late where you are in India, so thank you.
I live in California. So
you're in California. Oh my goodness. I have bad intel. Well, thank you for joining us in this sunny, beautiful California afternoon.
And Jennifer, great job. This is, it's always a challenge. The most difficult job on any of these panels is the moderator.
That's the fun part. So, are you kidding? You guys did the heavy lifting. Really appreciate it. There was a lot of great stuff here. Looking forward to more.
I just want to say thank you, Jennifer. I'm really sorry that two of our guests were unable to connect. Jamelyn, I'm sorry, I know you're still listening, but we'll get you on for the next one.
That is so ironic.
I know. But you three wonderful speakers have really kept it going and risen to the challenge. So thank you all very much.
Yes, a big thank you to everyone. I hope everyone has a great day. We're looking forward to the next Twitter Spaces event. We're very much looking forward to the 2022 NAB Show running April 23 through 27th in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we hope to see all of you there.